already on the phone right now is one of my favorite authors, Reese Bowen. Her new book, The Castle in the Glen, is out Tuesday, August 4th. She's on the phone now. Hey, Reese, this is our 19th interview.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll have to do something special for 20 next year, right?
Well, that, actually, it'll just be a few more months because the new Royal Spinus book will be out in November.
And you know what? A big thing, it's the 20th book in the series, too, so we'll do a double celebration.
And I was just reading the synopsis. We'll talk about your new book in a second. We won't talk too much about the Royal Spinus because it's not out yet, but I'm just reading the synopsis. Mummy's back! I'm so happy!
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, you couldn't miss the coronation, you know, when this is a big event of the year, and she is related to the royals, so we had to have the coronation, and you'll see it's a very exciting story, too.
And it looks like Queenie's got a little more responsibility, which I'm looking forward to.
sometimes.
Hey, so you write 3 books a year. You write The Royal Spinus, you write your standalone in the summer, and you write the Molly Murphy books. Do you ever get confused like you're writing the Molly Murphy book, but you do something that you think that's Georgie would do?
No. You know, when I'm writing a book, people say to me, can you write more than one at once? No. I'm completely and utterly immersed in that world to the point that if I'm writing Molly and it's the middle of a New York winter, even though it's July here, I come back and put a sweater on.
Oh, wow.
You know, I think because both Georgie and Molly are first person, I'm completely in her world. And I should point out now that I don't really write 3 books a year. I write 2 and a bit books a year because my daughter Claire now writes the Molly series with me, and she's taken over quite a lot of the writing now.
Oh, good.
I'm sort of the mentor in the background for the whole thing, but then, you know, I will say, well, I know about this thing, so I'm going to write it. But anyway, she does a lot of the research and comes up with a lot of the story ideas, and we talk every day.
And you're,
every day. So it's, you know, it's not a huge burden on me anymore.
And you're the editor, basically.
Oh, well, I'm more than the editor. I mean, I'm also the co-creator, you know, I'd say. Oh, I don't think Molly would have done that. I think she would have said so and so, you know. So, you know, we talk through, well, what would she see if she was at the hotel? What, you know, let's just picture the, you know. So we talk through that beforehand.
The Castle in the Glen is your new solo. You have one every year in around August. How do you come up with these stories? Does inspiration just strike you and you say that would make a good story?
I think, you know, some of these ideas have been toying around in my mind for a long time, and some just hit me like, oh, wouldn't that be interesting? I think the moment you're, you know, I've written an awful lot of books.
Yeah.
I have over 60 of adult novels out now. And I think the more you do this, the more you're in tune to something going, oh, well, that's a good story idea. You know, you listen to conversations at airports, and you notice people's behavior. And I think you're constantly got feelers out for, you know, what looks wrong here? What would make a good story? What if is a huge thing. What if, you know, that person sitting opposite me is actually being kidnapped? You know, so I think ideas float around in my head all the time. I've got more ideas than I can ever write in my lifetime. But I think The Castle in the Glen, I've been toying with the idea because I'm not as young as I used to be now. And I thought, well, what if an older writer couldn't finish a book? You know, in my character, Iris Blackburn, is suffering from the beginnings of dementia. And she's writing her last book, and she can't finish it. And I thought, well, what would happen then? So she brings in a young, upcoming writer to finish it for her. So that was one of the inspirations. The other was, I still have very vivid memories of my time in Scotland. And I thought, you know, Scotland is such an atmospheric place to write about. And I've been looking for a way to put it into a book. I've taken Lady Georgie there several times because it's her ancestral home. But I remembered particularly my own adventures on the Isle of Skye, getting trapped by the mist on a mountain and not being able to find the way down. You know, so I remember things like that. And I remember thinking at the time that the Isle of Skye is a place of great beauty, but great danger. And I thought, oh, you know, I've been wanting to put that into a book. Wouldn't it be great if this young, innocent Australian girl who knows nothing about Britain, really, is sent to the Isle of Skye to do the research on a story and begins to find out that the story is not fiction at all, but it's fact. So that was the driving force behind this book.
And she also finds herself in a little danger in Scotland.
She does, yeah, she does. I mean, that was one of the reasons for putting it on Sky, because I know that the whole setting in this is, in fact, a character. It influences plot all the time. So you've got the setting of the Isle of Skye with these very steep, sharp mountains and very changeable weather. And so, you know, you've got... And also, it's an island, and to get off it, you had, in those days, you had to go by boat. Today there's a big bridge, but to get off it, you had to go by boat. So if the weather was bad, people could drown. And people did drown, fishermen drowned quite often. So I wanted that whole element of danger to contribute to the story.
So Emma ends up going to Scotland, like you said. She's read the first 15, 16, however many chapters that Iris has already written, and she's like, I want to go investigate this some more. And she finds her life, like I said, in danger. Thank God for the handsome attorney that ends up showing up. And it's a little bit of a love story possibly going on there as well.
Mark, I can't ever have a book unless some romance creeps into it somewhere. I always try to tell a straight story, and then some kind of handsome man steps in somewhere and says, here I am. So I think I'm destined to write. You know, I write the sort of books I like to read, and I do like that touch of romance. I'm a big old softie, and I like that.
Well, and then the book ends like you always do. You always have like a major twist at the end of the books, and this one's no different. I kind of figured out a little bit of it, but it wasn't what I was expecting. So you did get me on it, Reese.
I think this is one of those books where you start off thinking you know everything, and then as you peel away the layers, you go, wait, no, that's not right. Wait, oh, I didn't know that. And until, you know, in the end, there's a big surprise. So I love that when I read a book, to get what I call that aha moment. And there are several of those in this book. You know, when Iris Blackburn's name was just one of them. And so I've really... You know, I enjoy putting those so the reader goes, oh, that's really fun for me.
And it's also like you wrote two books in one, because you wrote the story of Iris and Emma, but you also wrote Iris's book as well.
Oh, I know. I mean, I don't ever give myself an easy time. You know, I don't ever write a simple mystery in which we find a body on page one and we solve it by page 300. So I had to write quite a big chunk of Iris Blackburn's book. So I'm writing a book in the style of another writer, but not only that, in the style of another writer who may have the beginnings of dementia. So Emma does point out at one stage, this book needs some serious editing. So I had to remember that when I was writing, that we do get the same thing told two or three times, and things that I'd never do in my own book. So it was quite a challenge to write it.
Do you, the cover of the book, the artwork is pretty cool. Do you get a say in any of the artwork pitches?
All of it, yeah. I get an absolute say in the artwork. They send me various pictures, and I go, not that one, not that one. How about this one? And they sent me this, and I it was a beautiful Scottish. There were several they sent me that were of a castle, and I liked them. But this one I really loved because it had that atmospheric Scottish. But it didn't have a castle in it. So I said, we need to put a castle on a lake in the background. So they did.
Now, you're English. Do the English and the Scots get along, or is that just a myth?
Not the Scots. The Scots don't like the English very much. The same as my mother's family is Welsh, and the Welsh don't like the English very much, because both of those countries have been occupied by England since like 1300. So, I'm fine, because I'm a fellow Celt. You know, that the Scots, the Welsh, and the Irish are all the Celts that were driven out of the most of England when the Romans and Saxons and Normans all came and drove us further and further west. So I think we see eye to eye with the Scots. Added to which, my husband's ancestor, I think it was his great-grandmother, was Anna Murdoch MacLean. And her father was the Kin Gaelic, one of the local chiefs. And her mother, you won't believe this, was Beatrice Lachlan McLachlan of McLachlan.
Wow.
So you can't get more Scottish than that. So I have a connection to write about.
I'm looking at the some of the praise for your books, and you've got Lee Child, you've got Jacqueline Winspear, you've got Hank Phillippe Ryan, you've got Deborah Crombie. Do you ever meet these people, or do they just kind of send you the blurbs and say,
the
we liked your book?
The thing about that is these are all my close friends. I'm really close friends with all these people.
You and Lee Child hang out?
Yeah, we've known each other. In fact, I was there when Lee came for his first tour, well, a very small tour of America when he was complete and unknown. And it was one of these mystery writers parties. And the host said, would you look after him? This English guy. And so we've known each other ever since. And, you know, we go to dinner if we're in the same town and things. So, yeah, he's a really nice guy.
I'm looking at all your books. There's a series that I didn't know you when you were writing them, Constable Evans. Do you ever think you go back to that, or is that series completely done?
The interesting thing is I still get two or three letters a week saying, are you ever going to do more Constable Evans? I think the series is... The reason I stopped in the first place was... two things, I think. When I started out, the series, I would say, was very cozy. It was a cozy series. You know, there were murders in it, but it was sort of quirky local characters and things like that. As the series went along, it got more serious because he is a policeman, and I found that we were getting deeper and deeper sort of cases, which didn't in the way fit in with the punny titles. And so I think I didn't quite know where the series was wanted to go next. And also, they started to take some of the books out of print. This is before e-books. And I thought, well, if you can't find the whole series, there's no point in writing more. So I moved across. That was the time when I was moving across to Molly. And I moved across to the Molly Murphy books. Although I really did like, you know, I know that whole area I know so well. And I enjoyed writing those books. They've had several TV options over the years. Never worked out into anything, but... You know, there's still a chance it might show up in TV someday, which would be excellent because they're very, very scenic. You know, they take place in Snowdonia in North Wales, and so you've got a great feel for that countryside.
So now, where are you in writing your next book? The Royal Spyness book is obviously done. It's ready to come out in a couple of months. Are you working on the edits for Molly Murphy, or is the next Molly Murphy book done as well?
Scandal, and it really is among the 400 in New York. You know, we've got Alva Belmont, who was Mrs. Vanderbilt. We've got her daughter Consuela, who is now the Duchess of Marlborough, and so we've got all these very powerful, influential people who will do a lot to stop the scandal getting out. So that's what the whole book's about. And then I've just finished. I haven't quite polished enough yet, but it will go to my editor probably next week. The next standalone for next summer, which we do have a title for, which I love, which is called The Language of Lost Birds. And it's set in two time periods again. It's set in the present, and it's set in 1450 in a convent.
Oh.
So it's about a very rare book that's discovered. A female appraiser is sent to appraise a library at a big house in England and comes across this very rare book that was written in, was one of the first books ever printed in England in 1487. And so we see this book being written and we see what the connections are to this house. So again, it's two stories where one thing we find out in one story informs us to something that's happening in another story.
So, oh, sweet!
So it's about the whole concept of a library and absolutely loving books and what books mean to people, and also about birds. So it's a book about birds and libraries and everything people like.
Oh, Reese, it's always a pleasure talking to you. The Castle in the Glen again is out on August 4th. Look forward to talking to you in a few months for the next Royal Spiness book.
Yeah, we'll raise a glass of champagne for that one, Mark.
All right, as long as it's Dom Perignon.
Oh, absolutely. Nothing less.
And you're buying because you have three books a year. I don't have any.
I'm buying, right.
Okay.
All right, my dear.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
I'll talk to you. Bye.